helping the youngest Mainers get off to a good start. Early childhood care and education before kids get to school can be the key to their future success. It can also help save society future costs. Studies show children who get quality care and preschool education do much better later in life. Today on the program, we're going to learn how the state of Maine fares when it comes to investing in the future of its youngest citizens, and why some businesses are joining together to raise money to promote better and greater access to early childhood care and education. In the studio are Ed Cervone with the Maine Development Foundation, Judy Wright Parker with the Maine Children's Alliance, and Jim Clare, CEO of Gould Health Systems and co-chair of the Maine Early Learning Investment Group. Investing in children today for a better Maine tomorrow. This is Maine Calling. And good afternoon. We invite you to join our conversation on Maine Calling today. Once again, our phone number here, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can also email us, talk@mpbn.net, or we're on Twitter, @MaineCalling. I'm Erwin Gratz. Hello. Thank you for joining us this Thursday afternoon. You know, all three of our guests here today believe, I know, in the importance of early childhood programs, but let's find out a little bit more about what that means. How exactly is early childhood defined? Judy, I think we ought to start with you on this one. Go ahead.
Sure. I mean, pretty much early childhood would be, from my perspective, from prenatal to 8 years old. In the early childhood field, we might parse it a little bit by saying birth to five. But in reality, when you think about early childhood development, it's really prenatal to 8 years old. And that's partly because of the way that our human brain develops and also the way that we learn as our brain is developing.
Okay. Ed, you recently worked on a report that kind of drew the link between early childhood development and things economic. Are you looking at the same age range?
Yeah, more or less. For the sake of the report, we did kind of limit it to the birth to five. So we were dealing with the kid and the family at birth up to the point at which they would enter the K through 12 system, to really draw some attention to, what we would consider is not as much attention or investment in those first five critical years before they enter the mainstream system and before we are dealing with them for life at that point.
Okay. And Jim, for purposes of this new group, the Early Learning Investment Group, what's your target group?
Like Ed, it's going to be the 0 to 5 range with a special focus on 0 to 3.
Okay. Ed, talk about why early childhood is such a critical time.
Well, from a biological standpoint, it's really the basis for all brain development. It's the foundation that child has for the rest of their life. And if it's a good foundation, then we can expect good outcomes educationally, economically, health-wise, socially, community, and so forth. But if it's not a strong foundation, if it doesn't have some of the basic structures in it, we can expect poor outcomes. And poor outcomes translate a variety of ways. Economically, you know, less likely to be employed, earning a livable wage, more likely to be involved in some kind of public assistance system, more likely to need some remedial education, more likely to be in the criminal justice system. So all the things that are actually, you know, being discussed live at the legislature this year about what can we do cost savings, and just made a whole lot of sense for the Maine Development Foundation and our business members to say, if we're going to really try to tackle both human capital development of our people and try to manage the finance of the state, if you're not working in this birth to five realm, you're missing a huge, huge opportunity.
Judy, do you want to add something to that?
I think Ed did a wonderful job there. That's great.
All right.
I would say, just if you think about early childhood, Ed and Jim are right on target for focusing on the birth to five, and in particular the birth to three. We like to say in a group that I'm in that we have a focus on birth to five with a sphere of influence up to 8 years old. But if you don't have that strong foundation, then when kids arrive at kindergarten, They're not quite as ready to be successful. So all of the things that Ed's talking about are what creates the pathway for success.
So what sort of support do kids need during early childhood? Ed, you talked about it being a foundational time. What are the elements that need to go into this foundation?
Well, you know, we remind everyone, first and foremost, the parent is the primary giver of care and education. So anything that I would say the three of us would recommend has the family and the parent at the center. We're not abdicating taking that role away from them. In fact, if they're not a part of it, we're not going to have success. But in general terms, it's good interaction. It's speaking to your child. It's reading to your child. It's creating a safe environment, free from violence, free from other negative influences, hopefully giving them an environment, you know, of an economic standing that they can get basic needs, nutrition, and so forth. So combining all these things, making sure they're healthy, making sure that they're getting educational, meaning interaction with adults, learning their words, learning to speak, learning to identify things. If we can put all those together with the parents at the middle of it, we feel, well, it's not that we feel, the data shows conclusively that this works.
Jim, let me bring you into the conversation right here to ask you, okay, so you've heard some of those things. What are some of the goals of the main early learning investment group? What do you and the other people in business that you represent think you can contribute to this?
First, there are eight of us, eight companies that have come together to work on the main early learning investment group. And we organized this past January for our first meeting. We've had two meetings so far, and we meet again in about 3 or 4 weeks in early May. And I'd like to just list off the companies if I could, because I think it'll give you a sense of who we are as main companies and the size and depth of who we are. Bacon and Newman and Noyes, obviously Gould Health Systems, Bangor Savings Bank, Gorham Savings Bank, Bath Iron Works, Hannaford, Downeast Energy, and WBRC Architects. And we understand that we're going to have to raise funds, and we, as Ed mentioned earlier, have come to understand both the science and the economics of this issue, the science being the brain development piece and the economics being where we want to be as a state 5, 10, 25, and 50 years from now in the importance of early childhood investments as a way to foster economic growth. I'd be getting ahead of myself if I was being too predictive of the kinds of investments that we're ultimately going to make, but some revolve around parental education, but we see that probably as being a smaller percentage of the kind of investments we want to make. And much more of what we're interested in are providing a quality and quantity of early childhood investment opportunities for kids. That's probably where we're going to have most of our efforts.
All right. We'd like to invite you to join our conversation here. You can give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can reach us through Twitter at Maine Calling or email us talk@mpbn.net. We're speaking again today with Jim Clare, who's the chief executive of Gould Health Systems and co-chair of the Maine Early Learning Investment Group, Judy Wright Parker, early childhood policy analyst with the Maine Children's Alliance, and Ed Cervone, senior program director with the Maine Development Foundation. Jim, let me ask you, given there are so many demands these days on resources, both via government and through individual philanthropy and even businesses when they try to be good corporate citizens, why this area? Why put the money here? Why not into other problems, some of which are perhaps more immediate?
That's a great question. And I'm not sure I can speak for all of my colleagues on the group, but I think it's probably a fair representation to say that we are investing in a whole series of other ways. There are other philanthropic interests at Gould and our employees, et cetera, and I'm sure that's the same at Hannaford or Bangor Savings Bank, et cetera. But what we came to understand as a group of corporate leaders is that we really couldn't expect to get better results doing things the same old way. And we have all seen issues at our companies around the quality of workforce and that sort of thing. And, you know, we all know that Maine has a strong work ethic and a strong workforce. That almost goes without saying. But we also see the opportunity for improved investments yielding an even stronger workforce. Almost all of the companies on my group now compete either nationally or internationally. And we see the hyper-competitive environment out there. And part of that is about making sure that our kids are ready to participate in that economy going forward.
Let me pose a question that kind of has come in via email. Lisa in Benedicta is writing us to talk about the fact that parents, as Ed mentioned before, are critical for early childhood education, and was wondering what, if anything, we should be doing as a society to address issues like maternity leave, family-friendly working hours, livable wages, all of those things. Ed?
I think in general, and you know, you listed off a variety of specific topics, but I think in general, anything we can do to support a parent, both financially and in terms of time, to raise their kid in a quality, caring environment behooves all of us. I mean, I think from an employer standpoint, you know, we're a 9-person operation. Anything you can do to support somebody's, you know, access to their family and such ultimately helps us in terms of productivity and happiness and output. And it helps that kid. The kid's healthier. The kid's more prepared. Less likely to have to be called in, you know, for unforeseen issues down the road. So it really, anything we can do, and there, you know, there's a couple pieces there. There's a public kind of policy, but there's also, you know, in a private employer's perspective of this. And we have a lot of employers who are members of the Maine Development Foundation, and they go really out of their way, both in terms of, you know, looking at the health and happiness of their employees, but also their families, because they know that really in the end hits their bottom line well if they make that friendly environment. And they also know that it sets us all up for success down the road if that kid's going to be successful. So things we can do to help support families raise their kids, I think it pays off for everyone.
Jim, just to bounce that one back to you, are these areas that some of these member businesses might be able to look at, address?
It's probably fair to assume that as private sector businesses, we aren't interested in prescriptive approaches. We all think we know how to best run our company and have a good relationship with our employees and have a responsibility to be it our shareholders, our owners, that sort of thing. That being said, I agree with what Ed's perspective was, that if a business has their head in the sand and isn't understanding the importance of these issues, then that's a very short-term approach. And a lot of what we on MELIG are saying is that we have to take a longer-term view of things. And early childhood fits into that. Some of these policies that were mentioned by the member from the audience get to that point too. So I'm not someone, and probably some of my fellow members aren't interested in seeing necessarily prescriptive approaches from Augusta or D.C. on how we approach this. We should come to those understanding ourselves, and that's how you get to a solid relationship with your employees.
Right. We're talking today with Jim Clare, Chief Executive Officer of Gould Health Systems and Co-Chair of the Maine Early Learning Investment Group, also Ed Cervone, Senior Program Director with the Maine Development Foundation, and Judy Wright Parker, Early Childhood Policy Analyst at the Maine Children's Alliance. We'll take a break here in just a bit. When we come back, we'll talk more with them, and we'd also be happy to take your questions and comments. Once again, share your thoughts. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet @MaineCalling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or call us 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
Hi, this is Susan Sharon, Deputy News Director and Reporter at MPBN. Every day, my colleagues and I tackle the important news and issues close to home. You hear these stories on Maine Things Considered, on Morning Edition, Midday, and on MPBN.net. We're dedicated to doing the best job we can. And for many reporters, myself included, that means asking for more time. So you can imagine how we feel when the MPBN membership team interrupts our local news programming with pledge drives that sometimes span several days. We love them for what they accomplish, but we're news junkies at heart. That's why all of us on the news team hope you take part on Super Thursday, April 12th, the one day and one day only campaign to take care of business as quickly and efficiently as possible. Thanks in advance for your support.
Next time on The World, three young musicians from Ontario made a discovery while on a tour through France.
We found ourselves at a place called the Etaples Cemetery. You kind of go down into this ravine, go down these steps, and it opens up, and there's 11,500 soldiers buried there.
How a battlefield nearly a century old inspired an alt-country album. The group Elliott Brood, next time on The World.
Join us for The World this afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Welcome back to Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratz. Today we're talking about the importance of early childhood education and health care. With me in the studio, Ed Cervone of the Maine Development Foundation, Judy Wright Parker with the Maine Children's Alliance, and Jim Clare of the Maine Early Learning Investment Group, also Gould Health Systems. And once again, join our conversation. You can do that by calling us here, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Email us at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Judy, we were talking just before the break kind of about the role for business in creating a better environment for early childhood development. But what about the parent, the parental role? I mean, it's fine to get supports from society for parents, but what is it that parents need to do, and perhaps what do we need to focus on helping them to do their jobs?
So I think in particular making sure that parents have a good toolbox. I sort of liken it to a carpenter or a plumber who shows up to fix something at your house and doesn't have the right tools. Sometimes parents need help, and it can be a very simple thing, or it can be a much more long-term thing. What I will say is that 65% of our children 5 years and younger here in Maine have all parents in the household working. And so thinking about from a policy perspective, what are our investments in quality early care and education? You know, the state of Maine has what's called a quality rating and improvement system. It's called Quality for Me. And the highest level of that quality is at step 4. Sadly, a lot of these small businesses in Maine, which is what childcare programs are, really struggle to rise to that quality for a lot of different reasons. So looking at ways to make policies that would enhance those small businesses being able to move to that higher quality and to be very accessible for working parents and all the different shifts that various parents end up working, the multiple jobs here in Maine, would be one of the most significant policy arenas that we should focus on.
Jim, does that jibe with what it is that your group wants to do?
It does. We're specifically interested in a market-driven approach that will allow the demand for quality early childhood opportunities to rise to the surface, to improve. And by getting that kind of system-wide improvement, we think there'll be higher quantity of those options available to those families that need it. That's a big component of what we're interested in.
You can reach us here on Maine Calling at 1-800-399-3566. A couple of folks have done that, and we'd like to go to the phones right now. Let's talk first today with Van in Windham. Van, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I was wondering if the group thought that the Head Start program was an asset to early childhood development. Okay. I'll hang up with that question. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Ed, why don't you
sure,
start?
I'll jump in, and Judy has a lot of data on this, but the short answer is absolutely. Head Start's a great program for a number of reasons, but from like an analyst standpoint, it's one of the better documented programs as far as what do you put in and what are you getting out and how can we measure it. And Maine does exceptionally well. Kids who are invested in through Head Start do well and that success carries on in their life, it makes a measurable difference. So from our perspective, Head Start's a wonderful program.
But, you know, Ed, you and I had this conversation just a couple of months back. There was a federal report that came out in 2010 that raised some questions about Head Start's effectiveness, at least in terms of education. I was going back and rereading it again today. It did say that there were some noticeable improvements in some areas, but perhaps not in schooling.
Well, I think, and Judy truly is the expert on this, but when you review that report, what became clear is the data that was being referred to was really concentrated on those high-density urban zones in the United States. We are not one of them. And in fact, we have the ability to take that main data out of there, analyze it, and the conclusion was, oh, by the way, Maine's doing fine. Judy might have actually a more technical explanation than everything's good, but.
Yeah, the Maine Children's Alliance does do an annual Head Start report specific to Maine, and people can access it on our website. But the other thing that I would say about that Head Start impact study that you're talking about, it was done in 2010, and Ed's right that the lesser cognitive outcomes were related to quality of place and quality of neighborhood. And there's been some amazing research done at the University of Pittsburgh where they've looked at children's brain development of kids and kids' brains in first grade. And these kids are unable to sit down and focus and look at worksheets because they have been conditioned, they've been wired to think about fight or flight. And when you live in a dangerous neighborhood, it's not a smart idea to get lost in something and to get focused in something. And so it's very difficult for them to then go into a really traditional school setting and hone in on those things. So some of it's about thinking about changing how these children receive instruction. But also, the Head Start, the Administration for Children and Families, which oversees the Head Start Bureau, is implementing a next wave of research, and it's going to be about the quality of the public schooling and the elementary schooling for those kids in those high-density, very intense neighborhoods.
All right. Again, 1-800-399-3566 if you'd like to call and join our conversation. Let's go to Brian in South Portland. Brian, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I work, I'm the coordinator of the Strong Fathers Program out of the Opportunity Alliance. And work with a lot of men and wanted to make a comment and then I have a question after that, too. But one of the things that I think a lot of dads struggle with is really sort of recognizing the amount of impact that they can have on an infant's and toddler's brain development, and really want to encourage the dads who are listening to really think about how they can interact with their children, how they can support that early learning stuff that traditionally, culturally, we may have thought of as mom's role, and really want to underscore that dads are just as important in that process, and that they can really make a positive contribution to their kids' success once they do get to kindergarten and right on through. So want to encourage guys to think about broadening that out.
Okay. You had a question, too.
And then my question is on the economic or the business side of it. Another one of the things that I run into with a lot of the men that I work with who work in sort of lower skilled professions or less professional level work, they don't really have a lot of family friendliness or a lot of flexibility to really work towards doing the things that we think of as necessary, the flexibility that they would need to respond to school issues or get kids to the doctor, things like that. And so I wonder how the group thinks that we could really improve sort of having that message that family friendliness and parents being able to reach the needs of their kids, and especially for fathers, because a lot of times the message that the men I work with get is, well, that's not really your job, that's her job. So it's a secondary barrier for guys to really be as involved with their kids' care and needs as they might be. So how can we spread
right.
that out?
Jim, can we start with you on this one?
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Brian. Those are excellent points. The issue specifically around businesses being more understanding of the father's role is really important. And I'm not sure I have a specific answer, but it does strike me that one of the objectives of the MELIG, the Maine Early Learning Investment Group, is to raise some awareness around various early childhood issues and to speak out as members of the business community. And there's a whole series of things that are going on around that, not the least was Ed and the Maine Development Foundation and Dana Connors from the Maine Chamber addressing the Making Maine Work report. And so there, that's maybe a small example of how you're going to, I think, over the next couple of years, see more and more of the business community getting involved in raising some of these issues and trying to be good leaders. And by that, I guess you're hopefully setting good examples.
Okay. Brian, thank you very much for the call. We really appreciate it. Let's go next to Mary Ann in Windham. Mary Ann, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm very interested in this topic. I've worked with young children as a therapist in a variety of preschool, public school, Head Start settings. And I have a concern. I wanted to get some feedback from the panelists in regards to some of the expectations that we're putting on our younger and younger children regarding more and more structured education settings, where some children clearly are able to benefit from that, and others, because of the developmental stage that they're at, even just the variety of typically developing kids that we see, if that's always a good idea for children, and if some of these commissions and interested parties are really taking a close look at that and make sure we're not being misguided in some of our approaches in trying to educate young children.
Okay. Judy?
So from my perspective, play is the most important learning medium for all children, and possibly quite the same for us as adults. And I do think if you look at, again, the quality rating system, the quality for me, and you take a look at the expectations and how assessment is done and how curriculum is designed, I think it really does speak to your concerns, Mary Ann. And I would also say that the workforce, one of the challenges in the early childhood field is workforce capacity and knowledge and professional credentialing, and we're still in our infancy stages ourselves in the early care and education field. And I'd refer back to Brian's comment about that's her job. Some people think that anybody can take care of kids, but not everybody can successfully educate children, and that's really what you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. But when we're talking about play, that's children learn through play, everybody learns through play, and that's really probably the best practice advice that I would give.
Okay. Jim?
I'd just like to augment what Judy mentioned and say perhaps the inverse of play is toxic stress. And part of the thing that we're learning on the Early Learning Investment Group through a whole series of reports and analyses is how critically damaging that is to children. So certainly as a business person, it's not my interest to get people to, young one-year-olds to be software developers or something. It's to be in a safe, supported environment where they're able to learn and synapses are firing properly.
All right. Judy, I had another question for you. One of the things that your organization also works with is the Kids Count book. You kind of keep tabs on childhood poverty. And we were talking before about some of the factors that may negatively affect children who are going through Head Start. So I'm wondering, where is Maine in terms of childhood poverty? What are the trends like? And how does that factor into all of this?
So it's actually a concerning trend for us at the Maine Children's Alliance. In particular, the rate of children 5 years and younger continues to increase for the number of kids that are living at the poverty line. It's risen to 22% from this most recent census data from 19% before. It continues to be on the rise. And regionally, we have the highest child poverty rate of any of the other New England states. I think that these two gentlemen next to me can speak more eloquently about how we could address some of the economic issues that address Maine's young families. But certainly poverty, it doesn't guarantee that you'll experience toxic stress, but it does increases the possibility.
All right. Let's take another short break. And when we return, we'll have more of your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Should there be a private, four-lane toll highway in Maine stretching east to west,
Callous to Coburn Gore. Supporters say it would transform the economy of northern and eastern Maine. Others are concerned about environmental impacts. This week on Maine Watch, we'll discuss the idea with Chinbro CEO Peter Vigue and Barbara Cherry of Maine Audubon. We hope you'll join us for Maine Watch.
Join us for Maine Watch tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 9 on MPBN television, or tune in here on MPBN radio tomorrow afternoon at 12:30. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Portland Performing Arts Festival, presenting Epi Bird, the Coke Mentos Guys, in a live appearance June 28th. Tickets and information at portlandfestival.org. Join us after Maine Calling this afternoon at 1 o'clock for It's Your World. The guest is David Unger, senior editor for The New York Times, who discusses national security. That's It's Your World, David Unger, this afternoon after Maine Calling.
Welcome back to Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratz. Good afternoon. Nice to have you with us. Joining me today in the studio, we have Judy Wright Parker, early childhood policy analyst with the Maine Children's Alliance, Jim Clare, chief executive of Gould Health Systems and co-chair of the Maine Early Learning Investment Group, and Ed Cervone. We were talking about the importance of play just a few minutes ago, and Ed told us he really did tell us to identify him as the top stunt car driver special effects coordinator at the Maine Development Foundation. So there, if you want to talk to any of those folks, 1-800-399-3566. And just before we go back to the phones, we did get an email, and you're welcome to contact us that way too, talk@mpbn.net, from Wendy Alpa, I hope I pronounced that correctly, who is pointing out, too, that one of the very important things about early childhood development is good early dental health, and pointing out the kids should be seeing a dentist within 6 months after a first tooth erupts. If you're interested in more information about that, we have a link for you on our website at mpbn.net, or you can check it out on our Facebook page as well. Let's go next to Lynn in Norway. Lynn, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling. Now you are. Go ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm an early childhood educator. I teach teachers about early childhood education. And one of the issues that we come across a lot in many of our discussions in the classroom is how a lot of these wee ones, these really young ones, are not getting the nurturing at home because the parents lack the parenting skills. And we're talking specifically about parents who are on state aid, receive TANF, you know, all of those early childhood needs that they get through WIC and food stamps and whatnot. And a lot of them don't have the parenting skills to be able to provide opportunities for their children to learn their numbers and their letters before they go into preschool, or, you know, they don't send their children to daycare. The children don't socialize with other children as much as they should. And these are the children that are at risk of not being able to function at the same level or abilities as children their own age when they reach preschool. Any comments or would be welcome.
Okay. Judy.
So I'm just going to go back to that toolbox picture. And I think that when we think about public policy in particular and any ways that we can help support parents in strengthening their toolbox and learning about parenting in every possible venue, I think that's really important. And as a former preschool teacher, I would say that it's definitely the responsibility of a preschool program to be committed to a partnership with these families and to be a shared teacher of both the parent and the child in a way that can strengthen in the long term a parent's, make that toolbox bigger. And I certainly know that Head Start programs and very high-quality early childhood programs do that. They have parent advisory groups. They have parent nights where they bring in extra opportunities for families. And that's really a responsibility of a strong early childhood educator.
That leads me right to this email that came in from Anne, who says she works at an accredited nonprofit child care program which has been seriously threatened by the current economy and possibly budget cuts. I mean, it leads me to wonder, is all of this emphasis on early childhood intervention at this point, are we just trying to keep up? Is it possible to actually advance in light of the hard times the state is facing?
I'll I'm sure we all have something to say about that. I think in general, regardless of what the current financial crisis is facing the public or private sector, the fact of the matter remains is this is probably one of our best solid public-private investment strategies to raise a person's value, their prosperity, and raise our economy. So regardless if we have the money or not, it doesn't change the fact that this works, that we've already made a commitment to public education. It's approximately 40% of the state budget. It's over 60% of communities' budgets. So you can't tell me that people out there haven't already made some commitment to this. We just want to bring light to the matter that if you're going to spend that money, which we think you should, you're really missing a huge opportunity by getting a better product, better quality, at a better price if you're starting early on at birth to five. So we need to have the political conversations of the day of where's the budget, where are the finances. It does not hide the fact that regardless, this is probably our best investment strategy for workforce development.
Okay. Anybody else want to comment? Jim?
I would. Thank you. The data really speak for themselves in many ways. It's largely irrefutable. And we can have a debate on the margins about Head Start and quality, and not every place is co-equal. But it's a little alarming about some of the discussions in Augusta and D.C. about, you know, funding levels. But I also see an opportunity, and I'm no Pollyanna by any means, but I do see opportunity for us to address some of those concerns and also rethink this market-driven model that's going to speak about quality.
All right. Let's go next to Jess in Portland. Jess, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question for Jim. I support your enthusiasm for early childhood education, but I'm a little concerned with how advertising plays into it, since children are already so bombarded by advertisements. How will these corporations be making themselves known in the community to provide these services?
Specifically the corporations that are on the Maine Early Learning Investment Group, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not sure there's a specific tie-in to advertising at all. I think we see this as, first of all, a company like Gould Health Systems really doesn't advertise. We're a back office healthcare management function that does work for clients across the nation. I almost appreciate the fact that not many people know who we are. We just kind of do our thing. But this isn't it's not going to be a focus on advertising so much as I guess I want to just take a step backwards and say one of the members has a specific interest in food security. Well, it doesn't take much to figure out that Hannaford has an interest in food security. And I think we're all bringing a higher level of discussion, if you will, about our corporate interests and our public interests without a specific advertising tie-in. I guess that's the way I feel about it specifically.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Let's go next to Robert in Auburn. Robert, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm Robert Baskett. I'm the Director of Operations for Sandcastle in Lewiston, which is an early intervention site. Most of our business is providing services to children identified with special needs. And I'd say that the greatest threat to our survival is the regulatory environment. There have been massive changes in how the regulations are portrayed that affect young children, and it makes it impossible to predict which models of service delivery we can anticipate. And I just wonder if there's any way that people can promote a sort of cohesion in how the regulations work down so that we can effectively maintain a business amidst these budget cuts.
Ed?
Well, yeah. You know, that speaks to a broader initiative in the state. And I'll speak on behalf of the Maine Children's Growth Council, 40 or so stakeholders from around the state interested in this issue. There are a variety of excellent efforts kind of scattered around the state that address this at various issues. There's regulatory and multiple agencies and such like that. And there's common agreement that we need to look at that comprehensively. look at it as a whole system, try to start treating it as a system. So speaking to Roberts, Roger's a point was that part of that would be aligning regulatory. Part of that would be aligning rules such that we could first and foremost deliver the quality to the kid and the family, but also, you know, from Jim's standpoint too, is operate more in a kind of a open market setting, which means transparency, information, and ease of access. So, yeah, you're spot on. There's people trying to do that now, and we hope to continue those efforts over the next couple of years.
Okay. Thanks very much. Let's try to squeeze in at least one more caller here. This is Ted in Alexander. Ted, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm a retired pre-K through first grade teacher, did 31 years. And my concern, I'm calling because one of the previous callers had hit something spot on. My first year teaching, I had 27 children, about 85% with both parents living at home in the 70s. When I retired 3 years ago, I had only 20% of my children living with both parents. So the parent factor is huge. The other aspect is my first year teaching, when I was teaching first grade, and then my last year teaching in kindergarten, in that kindergarten class, I was teaching what I taught in my first grade year, my first year. So we're expecting more from our children now, and we are also giving them less support coming from the home. That's just more of a comment. The only way I see around it is possibly offering parenting classes in high school, because parents are the key. We keep hearing that and saying that, but they've got to learn to be parents somewhere. Thank you very, very much for your time and this show.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's go to Paul from Portland. Paul, we don't have a lot of time, but why don't you go ahead and give it a shot?
I understand. Thank you very much for taking my questions. I have two related questions. How do you account for the startling increase in behavioral problems in kids with diagnosed conditions in daycare? And what's being done for the kids and the families and the centers to keep these kids from simply being expelled and starting a life of a series of failures? Thank you very much.
Okay. Got about 60 seconds.
So I think that's actually why the three of us are here and why we really believe in early care and education and in early childhood. I do share your concern about the number of providers who are challenged by behavioral things. I would like to give a shout out for an organization called the Center for Community Inclusion. They do really wonderful work, albeit they're a little stretched now with recent budget cuts, but they do wonderful work helping providers figure out how to make their classrooms more inclusive and how to change their practices and improve their practices when they're working with children with special needs.
All right. Thanks to all of our guests today, Ed Cervone with the Maine Development Foundation, Judy Wright Parker with the Maine Children's Alliance, Jim Clare with Gould Health Systems, and the Maine Early Learning Investment Group. Today's program was produced by Jonathan Smith and our volunteers, Cindy Hahn, volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls, John Keimel ran the board, and we had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can listen to this conversation and previous editions of the show by visiting mpbn.net. I'm Erwin Gratz. You've been listening to Maine Calling here on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.